Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation for Blue Monday, and I would say that it's a very Blue Monday indeed for those of you on the left who are coming to understand that everything I've been warning you about, the people who've been using you, is coming to be true. We read over the weekend that Hitler was not such a bad guy, that the Holocaust was not so bad, really. The Russians suffer even more. And when asked why such a focus on the Holocaust, your hero, Oliver Stone, says, the Jewish domination of the media. Oliver Stone, your hero on the left, says there's a major lobby in the U.S. They're hard workers. They stay on top of every comment, the most powerful lobby in Washington, and that Hitler was misunderstood. And that's your friend Oliver Stone. That's the man you have come to love all these years, the man who was lauded the mass murderer, Fidel Castro, the man who lauds the mass monster, Chavez, Oliver Stone. So Oliver Stone and the other leftists here who seem to think that dictators are just fine so far as they're left socialists now comes full tilt and exhibits himself to be the worshiper, shall I say, or the apologist for Adolf Hitler. And I ask you on the left, especially you Jews, you Jewish who support left-wing causes without knowing that you're just useful idiots, what is it going to take for you to wake up to understand what is going on and what role you're being asked to play in this? Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Do you have any idea what happened, the bombshell over the weekend? When we have a left-wing filmmaker named Oliver Stone, who says that Hitler was a Frankenstein, but there was also a Dr. Frankenstein, German industrialist, the Americans and the British, said Hitler had a lot of support. He says Hitler's atrocities, why Hitler did far more damage to the Russians than the Jewish people. He said he killed 25, 30 million Russians, he said. The reporter says to Oliver Stone, why such a focus on the Holocaust? And Oliver Stone, your left-wing hero, says the Jewish domination of the media. Now, this is the same Oliver Stone who smeared the American military with that crackpot movie called Born on the 4th of July. Remember that one done in the 80s with that bad actor Tom Cruise playing the boy from Massapequa who got butchered, shot up in Vietnam? Remember that old movie where you came to hate the war and where you saw the American troops as murdering fascists? That was your boy, Oliver Stone. Same Oliver Stone, of course, has done other movies that glorify drug dealers such as Scarface. Don't you understand what you're dealing with here? You're dealing with a left-winger who is now glorifying Hitler, and you are being used as a useful fool. But if you don't want to talk about it, we'll talk about another useful idiot, which is, again, another useful idiot, which is you. Here's Howard Dean, perhaps the most laughable character in the Democrat machine. And I want you to just hear him in clip number one, then we'll talk about it.
Let me put in a good word for Newt Gingrich here.
That's a kiss of death.
No, I'm serious. The biggest difference between this Republican Congress and I don't agree with very much that Newt Gingrich wants to do, but the biggest difference is Newt has a ton of ideas to move the country forward. He did when he was Speaker. There are no ideas in the Republican Party right now in the Congress. They're the party of no. They desperately need some intellectual leadership. And whatever you think of Newt Gingrich, he can supply intellectual leadership. So I hope he does run.
Now, why would you think that a fool like Howard Dean would encourage Newt Gingrich to run for president? Well, now remember, I am not a fan of Newt Gingrich. I depicted him as the GOPAC tick in my book, The Political Zoo. I have seen through him from day one. I think Newt Gingrich is like the oil slick in the Gulf of Mexico. He just keeps on spreading his wares, and he's very thin when you look beneath the surface of the ink. Gingrich is a Democrat plant. Gingrich is the perfect candidate to reelect Obama, which is why a fool like Howard Dean would think that we'd fall for that. I will tell you again that Sarah Palin was brought in to destroy the McCain candidacy, and she did so. I will tell you again that if the Republicans run a Palin and even Gingrich, they're doing so to make sure that the Democrats get reelected, and all they will have done is take your money once again for a campaign that they cannot win. I am the perennial outsider. I acknowledge that. I admit that. Now, we can talk about these if you want. Oliver Stone and the self-hating Jews. Oliver Stone and the self-hating leftists. Actually, most leftists are not self-hating. They're self-loving. They loathe America and the American way. But the fact of the matter is he has now shown himself to be sympathetic to Adolf Hitler, and I'm asking you how you can live with yourself is the real question. But that's not the biggest point. The biggest point is the next one, which is Newt Gingrich. Do you actually think Newt Gingrich is a viable candidate who could beat Obama? You know he isn't. You know that Gingrich has no following. You know the only reason the Republicans would run him is to make sure he loses. Okay, so that's point number two. Now let's get to the granddaddy of topics today on this No News Day. Yeah, there's No News Day. How about the fact that both parties, going back to Bush, now Obama, have been robbing us blind for wars that we didn't need to get involved with? Let's start from the top. Both wars we did not need to get involved with. I'm asking you a straight-out question. Do you really think we needed to go to Iraq? Tell me the benefit to the average American for all of the lost lives and at least $1 trillion of tax money. Do you know why we're broke today? Yeah, you say the Wall Street scandal. That's true. Most of them should be in prison. There's no question that the leaders of Wall Street should be in jail along with the former head of the SEC. But you know that they're never going to go to prison because they run the government. You know that they picked Obama to be in the White House because money talks and the rest walks. So they're not going to go to prison. But the bigger reason the country is bankrupt and that our currency is devalued, in my opinion, it's one man's opinion, is that the war bankrupted us. First the Iraq war, now the Afghan war. Now, why are we at war in Afghanistan? We don't know. Nobody knows. There's no reason to be in Afghanistan. Why were we in war with Iraq? All right, Saddam was an evil guy, and he tortured and he killed, and his sons were evil, and they tortured and killed. Well, you're telling me Kim Jong-il isn't as evil? You're telling me that there aren't equal dictators in other parts of the world? No, the reason that Saddam was killed had nothing to do with that. It had to do with oil. It had to do with make certain that the Seven Sister Oil Companies could continue to dominate the globe. Now, the reason I could prove that, and I'll tell you why my suspicion will probably be held up to be true in historical context, is this. We were lied to by Bush, both about WMDs, which never existed. We know that for a fact. I know many of you say that they were moved to Syria, but you can't prove it. We were also lied to by Bush when he said that the war will not cost us anything, that the Iraqis will pay us in oil after the war is over. Have the Iraqis sent us one barrel of oil? No. The same way the Mexican government should be paying us in oil for the social costs of the illegal alien hordes who have decimated the United States of America. The illegal alien hordes have cost us billions and billions of dollars a year for many years. I, in my book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, suggested that we should force Mexico to pay us reparations in the form of what they have a lot of, which is oil. Mexico has one of the largest reserves of oil on Earth. And it could be piped to us, not even shipped by ships. Forget the Straits of Hormuz. Just pump it in from Mexico. Pay us back for the hospitals destroyed, for the schools destroyed, etc. But Mexico has not been asked to pay us one barrel of oil. And so therefore, my friends, what you are seeing when you hear these dialogues about illegal aliens or war, you're just looking at the shadows on the wall of the cave. You're not even seeing the actors. You don't even know what's going on. There's a far different game than the one we are watching. You're not even watching the right game, so you don't even know who the players are. I'll be right back. Savage. You know, many people in the conservative movement or on the right side of things have written books and write a lot of books. But I challenge any of you listening to this show to quote something that any of them wrote that has any lasting meaning or an insight in any of the books that you really didn't know of before. And yet I'm going to compare myself to them, and yes, I'm going to do so because nobody else will do it. Years ago, not too many years ago, copyright 2005, God, it's 5 years ago, I wrote Liberalism as a Mental Disorder. Much of what you hear coming out of Glenn Beck's mouth, almost everything you hear coming out from the right-wing media is in this book. Almost everything I wrote is being repeated today as though they discovered it themselves. And I don't want to repeat it to prove it because I really don't have to prove anything. The point I'm making is I see things ahead of others. And I am telling you that what I wrote in this book about Bush and the Iraq War, where I said I hope I am wrong, turned out to be true. Did you hear that? I said that it could turn out that Bush's invasion of Iraq could result in the increase in power of Iran, the increase in the borders of Iran, which has de facto occurred, in the sense, I don't know how many of you understand this, Saddam was a Sunni Muslim. They were a minority group in Iraq, and they kept the majority Shia under control with vicious tactics, okay? Iran is primarily a Shiite nation. Saddam was an enemy of Iran. They had gone to war with each other, killing a million of their own people over God knows what they disagreed with. It was something to do with some religious disbelief about the 1300s, I suspect. But the point is that he was a stabilizing influence in the Middle East, not destabilizing. I don't think you understand that. Saddam was actually a stabilizing influence in the Middle East. He kept Iran in check. Now, I said, God forbid, it could turn out that this is the greatest military blunder in history. Iran will benefit. There will be a new Persia. Now, you're telling me I was wrong about that? You're telling me that my insights and my fears were wrong? I don't think I was wrong. So now I bring it up to the current issues of the day. The current issue of the day is Afghanistan. Nobody can tell me why we are in Afghanistan. Nobody can tell me why so many brave men are being whacked in Afghanistan. So many men are being killed in Afghanistan. For what? Where is the national security imperative? Because I don't understand it. To this minute, I don't have a reason for us being there. Most of the troops who come home don't know why they were there. They're professionals, so they do what they're told. I understand that. I respect that. But why are we there? Why are we wasting our national treasuries like this? Why are the people putting up with a liar like Barack Hussein Obama? The biggest liar in American history, the biggest liar in the White House is Barack Hussein Obama. Here is a man who fraudulently claimed he would end the war. Here is a man who committed so many frauds while running for office that he should be impeached. Here is a fraud called Obama who pretends with one hand to be a man for the poor when he caters to the rich because they put him in power. Here is a fraud as a president who said he would end the war in Afghanistan and bring the troops home. Instead, he put 40,000 more troops into Afghanistan, and not a peep comes out of the liberals who put him in power. Hardly a peep. Again, we see lies everywhere we turn. Lies, lies, and more lies. Now, in the past, we could have, you know, shrugged it off and said, okay, this is what you get. Politicians are all liars. We are bankrupt. I don't care if officially we're not bankrupt. Our currency is worthless. Our currency has no value whatsoever. And it's only a matter of time until our enemies, mainly China and Saudi Arabia, get together and replace our currency with another currency. And what are you going to do with your paper then? You're going to go to the supermarket with a wheelbarrow full of paper, as was done in the Weimar Republic in the 1920s in Germany? Do you understand the danger we are in with this fraudulent imposter in the White House? It would have been bad enough if we had had a Democrat to begin with, but we have something less than a Democrat. We have something so low that he will go on the lowest television show in the land to try to boost his ratings with which audience? The stay-at-home welfare mom that watches those shows? Do you have any idea what we're dealing with here? You had a jive and a hustle, and now you have to pay the consequences. For years, you watched Oliver Stone's movies. You thought he was some left-wing genius. He put down the troops who went to Vietnam. He made them into fascists and murderers in the movie Born on the 4th of July. He made you think that every soldier who came home from Vietnam was a basket case. You bought that lie. He then glorified the Cuban drug dealer in Scarface. You bought that lie. He now glorifies Chavez, the dictator from
South America, you buy that lie. And finally, we wake up and we hear that he's glorifying Adolf Hitler and blaming the Jews in the media, who he says are glorifying the Holocaust when it never really was that bad, that Hitler wasn't such a bad guy. When are you going to wake up? Don't you understand the danger you put us in? Don't you left-wingers who are so vocal and give so much money to left-wing causes, don't you understand the danger you put yourself in? I know who funded the ACLU. I know who their largest donor was. You don't know that. And I'll tell you his name one day this week. But I will give you a hint. The man who gave $9 million to the ACLU several years ago, I should say his wife, were the biggest bank fraudsters of the last 5 years. They made billions of dollars in selling their savings and loan operation out here in California just before the collapse. And most of what they sold was built on fraud. They should be in prison and their assets seized. Now, tell me why, and they're Jewish, by the way. I'm sorry to tell you. And yes, it's going to come up. I'm sorry. I'm going to say it over and over again until you get it through your head. Why, oh, why, oh, why? They gave $9 million to the ACLU. Why did they give money to the ACLU, which hates America, which undermines the family, which undermines the military, which undermines the police, which undermines the morality of America? Why would they give $9 million to the ACLU? What do you want me to do, just sit here and entertain you with fake crying and laughing? You want me to get up here and fake it like a preacher? I'm not going to do that, because there's just a tiny bit of the prophet left in me. I inherited a tiny bit of the prophetic gene, and I have to use it every day that I have left on the radio, because I only answer to one boss, and you never met him. And I didn't either. But one day I will, and you won't. This is the Savage Nation. When I come back, we have Andrew Breitbart on the show. Andrew Breitbart, as you well know, was involved with a very, very big story last week. In fact, he is so powerful that he had the Obama administration dancing to his tune. And that's why the midstream media is so jealous of Andrew Breitbart and Matt Drudge and talk radio. He'll be here. You'll be here, dummy.
Savage.
The first time I was faced with having to help a white farmer save his farm, he took a long time talking, but he was trying to show me he was superior to me. Right. I knew what he was doing, but he had to come to me for help. Mm-hmm. What he didn't know while he was taking all that time trying to show me he was superior to me was I was trying to decide just how much help I was going to give him.
All right, well, that's from last week. The black lady civil servant in the Department of Ag was fired, now maybe rehired, as a result of the tapes that, which came out and in which she was speaking to the NAACP. And, of course, the man who released the tapes is a man who brought down Acorn, rightly so, because Acorn is a corrupt organization involved in all sorts of bad dealing, in my opinion, that keeps electing radical leftists that have undermined this incredible republic of ours. And so joining us right now is Andrew Breitbart. Andrew, welcome to the Savage Nation. I want to say thank you for coming on the show, because I know you've been sort of in retreat.
Oh, it was an intentional ploy to get out of the media, let Shirley speak, because the more Shirley Sherrod speaks, the more people realize that she's not the saint that CNN and the rest of the mainstream media tried to portray her to be. But let it be known to your audience, this was never about Shirley Sherrod. There's a major context to this story. That even Shirley Sherrod on day one when she was fired, she understood she was caught between the crossfire between the Tea Party and the NAACP, which was trying to make 6 days of the mainstream media allowing for the NAACP to say, is the Tea Party racist, is an act of propaganda, an act of negatively branding the Tea Party intentionally.
Right, right. It's like saying, have you stopped beating your wife? Of course, that's how it's been set up. Look, Andrew, you and the Tea Parties and Drudge and Michael Savage and a few others stand between us and the deluge, between the nation falling into off the cliff. We know that. And so they're in full mode attacking you. Andrew, I have to ask a question because no one has asked it. You said to the New York Times you did not edit those tapes. Is that correct?
No, I had. What I did was I found out about these videos or this video back in April, and I got a tip in the email from a guy down in Georgia who I said I would have nothing to do with. He didn't want anything to do with exposing himself as another Joe the Plumber, and said I said I'd protect him, and he sent me a video in the form of a DVD back in April, maybe mid to late April. And once I got it, I put it into my computer, and it didn't show up. I went to a computer expert. It didn't show up. And I sort of dropped the ball on it, and I didn't really think at the time that it was that big of a story. I mean, you know, the NAACP expressing racism is hardly newsworthy in 2010. It's sort of their raison d'etre.
Yes, that's right.
So I dropped the ball, as it were. And when I saw on Tuesday of last week or 2 weeks ago, Ben Jealous begin this propaganda campaign, I said, okay, well, that's just typical. And this is the White House using the NAACP as a proxy to act as an instigator of a race battle, a very cynical race battle that's based upon faulty evidence. The centerpiece of the NAACP's campaign is that the N-word was hurled at three black congressmen, and I've proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that that didn't happen. The secondary evidence that they used is lowering the threshold for an organization to have to explain away racism to perhaps an aberrant sign in Tallahassee that the whole group has to respond to. And so when they made the reaction of the audience of the Tea Party, that was the deplorable act that defined the Tea Party as racism, and that ABC, CBS, and NBC, and CNN, and the New York Times allowed for the NAACP to spend six full days to negatively brand the Tea Party as racist, I called that guy up, and I said, hey, you remember that video that you talked about? I think it actually has some pertinence to what's going on in the news cycle right now, and I need to get it out there as soon as humanly possible, because when I proved with four videos that showed that that the N-word wasn't said at the Capitol steps, all the media outlets that I went to and begged for them to show it said, well, that's not newsworthy anymore. That was two or three news cycles ago.
Oh.
So I recognized that I had to get the video up that showed that the audience acquiesced to Shirley Sherrod's racist narrative, and he sent me two videos, and I granted her the exculpatory narrative that the media claims that I edited out. Let me read for you the part of the piece that talks about this is a piece that talks about how this is about the NAACP and not about Shirley Sherrod. But let me describe.
But Andrew, hold on. Andrew Breitbart, this is very important. This is the crux of the entire issue. So you asked for the guy again to send you the same exact videos. He sent them to you in the edited form?
So he had sent me the full thing. It's impossible to transfer over this massive, massive, massive file of a 45-minute thing. So I asked him to cut the pertinent information. This is what he sent me, and in the actual video, you will see at the very end, she said, this is not about race. This is about black versus white. And in my piece, this is what they will not grant. My piece, I write this. In the first video, Sherrod describes how she racially discriminates against a white farmer. She describes how she is torn over how much she will choose to help him, and she admits that she doesn't do everything she can for him because he is white. Eventually, her basic humanity informs that this white man is poor and needs help, but she decides that he should get help from one of his kind. She refers him to a white lawyer. Sherrod's racist tale is received by the NAACP audience with nodding approval and murmurs of recognition and agreement, hardly the behavior of the group now holding itself up as the supreme judge of another group's racial tolerance.
Now, you wrote that, Andrew. Has that been published yet?
That was in the original piece that I wrote.
Well, that's not being heard by many people today, is it?
It isn't. Of course it isn't being heard, because, and you know who was on my side at the very beginning? Shirley Sherrod. The first day when she was thrown under the bus, she came back to the media and said that she was harassed by the White House by the side of the road. She said, you need to look at the whole context, and they refused to listen, and they fired her. It was she who said that she got caught between the NAACP and the Tea Party. Now, when she goes to the White House or she talks to the president and she talks to the White House, this woman who recognized that it wasn't about her, that it wasn't about that it was about the NAACP's situation against the Tea Party. She goes to the White House. She gets a job back, not her original job, which is curious, and we can get back to that. Shirley Sherrod now becomes, like the NAACP and like the Congressional Black Caucus, a weaponized proxy against the Tea Party, against Fox News, and against Andrew Breitbart. Have we seen this over and over and over again? They got to her, and she spent the next 3 days burying herself, calling me a racist, saying that I want to go back to slave days. She was not saying this on Monday and Tuesday before she talked to the White House. The White House is using race to split this country apart. It's not just me who says this, Michael. Listen to this one. Mary Frances Berry, the Clinton and Carter appointee of the Civil Rights Commission, said last week in Politico, she said, this is the Democratic Party's strategy. The Republican Party and the Tea Party are no more racist than the average American. This is the Democratic Party's strategy to have the opposition have to answer the question, are you a racist, instead of having to deal with economic questions such as joblessness and unemployment.
But, Andrew, I hear you. I agree with you, by the way, 100%. I know that this administration specializes in racial enmity. I've said the same thing for months. I've said that it's the most racially divisive administration in history. They've divided the nation more so than any I've seen in my lifetime. I understand all of that. Unfortunately, you got caught in the crosshairs. But I really want to go back to one thing and one thing only, because it's, to me, in your defense, if you wish not to answer it, Andrew, I'm going to let it go. The tape you ran, was that an edited tape, and who edited it?
The guy in Georgia edited it, and at the end of the tape, it says it offers the beginning of her exculpatory story. If you read beyond that...
But, Andrew, I'll tell you what I think, and I said it on the radio, or I wouldn't repeat it right now. First of all, I said you're my friend. That's number one, and I say it again. Let the chips fall where they may, Andrew. I'm that kind of personality. I'm not going to now shift gears and say, well, and not take a position. I'm not Shep Smith of Fox News. I'm not O'Reilly, and I'm not Hannity. I'm your friend, Andrew. And so what I'm worried about here is this, and I said it last week, Andrew, and I'll say it right on the air for as many hundreds of thousands of millions that will hear me. I think that the government itself sent that tape to you through the so-called man in Georgia, and that you published it quickly, and that they knew this would happen. I think that the handwriting of Rahm Emanuel in the White House is all over this affair. I'm not saying you're gullible. I am saying that they set you up.
Said that, but I'm just going to have to agree to disagree with you. I do not believe that. I have many reasons to understand that that's not the case. That is that starts sending people down the wrong gopher hole. That is not what happened. The story stands on its own right now. The exculpatory information is in there. If this individual wanted to make it about an erroneously cut video, I asked him to send me the pertinent stuff, and he keeps in the part where she says it's not just about race, and it's not just about it's not about black versus white. It's about rich versus poor. If this person were Rahm Emanuel, I guarantee you that would have been cut off, and that would have set me up. In the piece, it says she offered to help the white farmer. She understood that this was my attempt to point out to the NAACP that those that live in glass houses should not be throwing stones. I've been on the case of trying to stop this administration and the Democratic Party from trying to split this nation on the sensitive racial schism. It's the last thing that we can afford.
All right, look, I'm going to let that piece go because you're closer to it than I am, and you would have a better grasp of it than I have, but I don't put anything past the Dirty Tricks division of this White House, Andrew, and I also have said that to you before. So having said all of that, Andrew, I would like to open this show up, the Savage Nation, to callers around America. Are you willing to stay with us another segment and take some calls?
Of course.
Well, you see that? He's willing to do that, but we can't get the same answer from Shirley Sherrod, can we? She wouldn't come on the show and take callers and face the nation. So this is the Savage Nation. Today we're going to be Face the Nation. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Our special guest is Andrew Breitbart for you to ask a serious question of. Right now, call that number. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. As you well know, there is a war going on in the United States of America. It is a war between the government media complex and conservative patriots. And I'm asking you if you understand that you're part of this battle. Now, Andrew Breitbart has attacked his administration in the past, and rightly so. He infiltrated their stormtroops called ACORN. He exposed ACORN's criminality, and he caused ACORN to go sort of bankrupt. And it only makes sense that this latest so-called scandal is the White House's dirty tricks office hitting back at him. That is my opinion. And I'm asking you, is the charade scandal of last week and the attack on the Tea Parties Obama's October surprise? Joining us again is Andrew Breitbart on the Savage Nation. Andrew, welcome back to the program. You know you're making history, Andrew. You know that.
Well, I'm a little bit too in the bushes right now to be able to have that perspective. There's a lot of facts out there that I want the American people to have. This passion of mine, really, to start going after the administration's clear-cut strategy to use race, not by Obama, who tries to float above it all, but to use proxies, started at the exact moment that one would predict that they would do so, having spent a year investing 100% of their efforts trying to push this toxic Obamacare down our throats, knowing that Monday they would have to start a strategy to stop the bleeding come November because the majority of the people were against this. I predicted that they were going to do something. I didn't know what it would be. So the day before the vote on this thing, you start seeing the singularly most controversial members of Congress walking through the Tea Party with provocative actions. You have Sheila Jackson Lee giving the V sign to the crowd. You have the Congressional Black Caucus walking as an intimidated pack.
In other words, Jean Provocateurs, they were provoking reactions. They wanted something to happen, and it didn't happen, and they said it happened anyway. Andrew, before you go on, because I want to hear every word you want to say, you know, your passion is what's required in America to save this country from the communist socialist left. I want to make one quick quote. Listen to this. Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. once wrote, "As life is action and passion, it is required of a man that he should share the passion and action of his time at the peril of being not to have lived." Andrew, you're very much living, and we need you very much. And I want to take it a step further, because the new American nationalism is what's required, or we're going to fail to exist as a nation. You know that in your heart, don't you?
Not only do I know that in my heart, that I know that this is a prime Alinsky tactic. Shirley Sherrod on the tape, and it really isn't about her, but now that we're talking about her, she gives away the game. She says that all opposition to Obamacare is racist. This is the programming that is coming from this Obama White House. She was picked to be a federal appointee to oversee over $1 billion.
All opposition to Obamacare is racist? That's their new play card? Are they crazy? So in other words, it's the same thing as the Arizona law, the same thing as the opposition to the hordes of illegal aliens who have swamped our schools and our hospitals. Anyone who opposes the invasion is a racist. I would say that the invaders are the racists, since they wave Mexican flags at sporting events and they won't speak English. Who is the racist here, Andrew?
Okay, in the same video, if I wanted to put out a video that portrayed that Shirley Sherrod was racist, when she says that, that shows that she's the racist, that she thinks that everybody that disagrees with redistribution of the wealth is a racist. This was about showing that the audience politely applauded and laughed and agreed with her when she was talking about how she stiffed the white farmer. I was trying to hold them to the same standard. But the thing that is my passion is about saving this country. And I had a pre-planned event for next Saturday, July 31st in Philadelphia. And if you live in New Jersey or Philadelphia or Delaware, that entire area, this is a pre-planned minority Tea Party called Unity, UNI-TEA. My conversion from being a leftist to a conservative happened the moment that I watched the same group of people, the white professional class, Senator Boxer, the Patricia Schroeder, the mainstream media, Metzenbaum, Kennedy, you name it. Even Joe Biden, when they took on Clarence Thomas and said that he was an Uncle Tom, and they asked him private questions that should not have been asked as a means to humiliate him, as a means to send the message to black Americans that the NAACP and the media will not protect you from being attacked by white people if you are a Republican or a conservative. That turned me into a conservative. So this is where my passion is, and I will be speaking to a minority group of people that this is their fight. That Gallup says that 23% of the Tea Party is minority. That is what the Democratic Party is fearful of, because Cedric.
So wait, Andrew, where is this event that you're holding? Give it out right now.
It's a little known place called Independence Hall in Philadelphia.
Well, how do people who want to go, like minorities who want to be in that Tea Party, how do they get in touch with the organization?
Go to uni-tea.org. If it's not that, I think it is. Just type it into Google, uni-t. This country cannot be saved. Its original promise, it's the founding documents, the ideals of this country can only be reengaged if the entirety of this country, e pluribus unum, is brought to bear here. This cannot be a Caucasian
American. Andrew Breitbart, can you stay with us and come back at the top of the hour, because this is too important for the American people not to hear. Can you be here? If not, I'll understand.
I can be here.
You're listening to Andrew Breitbart, and if you're not hearing what he's got to say, you're deaf, and you're dumb, and you're blind. And if you want to speak to Andrew Breitbart, you call the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listening to the drug addicts and the communist revolutionaries, the Beatles. And as you well know, the communists are now running America. Some of them know it. Some of them don't know it. Some of them are just useful idiots. But the fact of the matter is the Communist Socialist Front is now running the United States of America. On the other side are the American patriots, borders, language, culture. I've been telling you this for 15 or 16 years on the radio. I've warned you about the government media complex. And now, case in point, we see the government media complex in overdrive on steroids attacking Andrew Breitbart and the Tea Party and talk radio all at once, saying that we are the problem, that we are racist, we are this, we are that. The very same government media complex that ignored the Black Panther scandal, where Black Panthers with clubs in military garb appeared at a polling booth, intimidated voters, and the case was thrown out by Eric Holder and Obama because they would not prosecute. That case not covered by CBS, while CBS has jumped all over the Shirley Sherrod case. I can give you five other examples of this deceitful. I would use the word evil, but it will diminish my argument, so I won't use the word evil. But my friends, I don't know of another word to describe the government media complex. They are evil. They are dragging us into a Euro-socialism that this country was supposed to be in opposition to. And we are standing opposed to them. And they're using every dirty trick known to mankind to try to overcome the actual people themselves. Because make no mistake about it. What are the Tea Parties? I was asked this the other day by the Wall Street Journal. They're going to run the interview this week. He said to me, what are the Tea Parties? I said, fundamentally, they're middle-class business owners and workers who don't want to support third worlders who've invaded the country and a bureaucracy that's milking them dry. That's the Tea Parties. They're the people themselves. And so now you have Andrew Breitbart. He gets caught, in a way, in the whole mix by releasing a tape of what he says is a racist woman in the government laughing at a poor white farmer, and then she catches herself in the middle of it, and she says she's going to help him anyway. And he's ripped apart by ABC, CBS, CNN, and others in ways that you can't imagine, when all he wants to do is make this country safe for his children. Because he recognizes what will happen if we throw away our sovereignty. He recognizes what will happen if we throw away the protections that were afforded us in the Bill of Rights. He recognizes that we are safer in this country with the checks and balances than we would be with a Euro-socialism where a judge, let us say, from The Hague will determine what we can and what we cannot do. Joining us now is Andrew Breitbart, again on The Savage Nation. Andrew, thanks for joining us, and I hope you didn't mind the editorializing, but I have to do such things from time to time in order to satisfy my own audience. Andrew, before we go back to taking callers, I want to go back to the Sherrod case. Are you standing by your allegations that you think she is somewhat racially biased against white people?
Well, look, I don't want this to be Sherrod about Sherrod. They're the ones that recognize that they had a fantastic narrative. If they could change the subject from the NAACP's propaganda campaign that you called the government media complex, is that they granted for 6 full days the ability to save the Tea Party. When did you stop beating your wife? To negatively right. brand it. And so there is a context here that I wanted to tell the NAACP that we saw exactly what they were doing. They were doing what the Congressional Black Caucus was doing and acting as a proxy war, proxy warriors for Obama to change the subject from the economy to whether or not Obama's opponents are all racist. And
right.
if this were from Rahm Emanuel, I need to reiterate this.
Right.
This tape, which we issued the next day, has her talking in such racial and mostly Marxist tones. And the second video that we offered is so unbelievably damning for a federal employee to say that she oversees over $1 billion worth of money. And in the second video, which nobody wants to play up, she says that she tries to get people to take government jobs because you can't get fired from government jobs.
Oh,
that's
my
why
God.
The Tea Party, that's
wait a minute. She oversees $1 billion of funds a year before she got fired? She was in charge of $1 billion division?
More so than that, and I hate to open up this hornet's nest, but it's there to be opened up. Again, I did not isolate Shirley and all of her Marxist and racial tones that were there. I wanted to point out that the Tea Party countenanced the racist rhetoric. If we want to look at the entirety of the tape, which many even on the right say is exculpatory for her, you will see a person who has a very Marxist way of looking at the world. And the hornet's nest here is Pigford. Now that I've given you a word to Google, you will see that she was part of a class action lawsuit with her husband, Charles Sherrod. It's the Black Farmers Discrimination Lawsuit that has its basis in the 1980s.
Hold on. I intimated this last week, Andrew, because I saw it in passing. She sued the government before she got her job. Is that right?
Yes, and she got $300,000 distribution in it. But what happened is, and Steve King, the congressman from Iowa, has been investigating this for forever, and he said on another radio show that there's about 95% to 96% fraud in this thing. And when you want to talk about redistribution of wealth, in essence, a new supplemental, this initial settlement from years ago had a statute of limitations. In a latest military budget, $1.5 billion was put in there to be a supplemental fund to fund this program to pay black farmers who were, quote unquote, discriminated against. And according to Congressman King, it's rife with fraud, and more people are applying for money from this than there are black farmers in the country. And
oh, my God, what a story that is. You think Bob Schieffer will cover that little side story, Andrew?
Look, this is, listen, you have to understand, you got to pay attention to this thing, and I'm really in the weeds right now. But isn't it interesting that she got fired so quickly? When I'm the guy that brought down Acorn, I can't take credit for thinking this thing through. We stumbled upon a rock. You pick up the rock, and she was part of the class action lawsuit against the government. The government, upon its settlement, hires her and puts her in charge. And so she's in charge of the distribution. And people are basically coming in there and saying, yeah, I wanted to be a farmer back in the 1980s, but I knew that I couldn't because I was black, and therefore I want a check, and they're getting distribution checks on this.
Oh, my God almighty, what a story this is, Andrew. This is a much bigger story than the NAACP tape, isn't it?
We stumbled upon it, and I think that that's why it took a couple days for Barack Obama, who quickly fired her, thinking, I can't have people looking into this. And I think what's conspicuous is it took 2 days, and when they gave her a job, they didn't give her a job back. They gave her another job.
We're speaking with Andrew Breitbart. If you have a question or a comment, a quick one now, don't ask him how he is. Don't tell him you love him. You're on the Savage Nation. This is not a personal phone call. Fire away, and then we're going to take it off the air, meaning you're going to hang right up. Patricia, New York, from WOR. What's your question for Andrew Breitbart?
I have a comment. I heard his old statement, and I believe him 100%. I think that Shirley did both a mea culpa.
Wait, please. Please, I don't want editorializing. I'd like a question then.
Do you think that it was the NAACP that dropped the dime on Shirley?
Andrew, you want to answer that one? Andrew, would you answer that?
I'm back. What's interesting about the NAACP here is that they're saying that there was a rush to judgment by Andrew Breitbart. I'm the one in my initial post granted her exculpatory narrative that said that she, you know, helped the white farmer. It was the NAACP that possessed the full video when this all transpired and they threw her under the bus. I think that that's incredibly conspicuous here that the NAACP did not come in and support Shirley Sherrod.
Andrew, where can the people read more about the lawsuit that this poor victim, Shirley Sherrod, the lawsuit that she inflicted on the government, the settlement? I understand it was something like $9 million that was dispersed and she got a piece of it. And then they gave her a job. Where is all of this written? Where do we get the whole story on that?
Well, it's about 13. All you have to do is type in Pigford, P-I-G-F-O-R-D, into Google, Pigford Settlement. And it's a very big story that we're just starting to get our hands around because everybody is sending emails saying, I can't believe you guys stumbled upon this massive story. So we're just getting our hands around this thing. But this speaks to the redistributive change that Barack Obama intimated. And think about this. They just pulled out that $1.5 billion last week while all of this was happening from a military bill. And I don't know if this is the case, but imagine this.
Wait, you're saying they removed the $1.5 billion out of the military budget after the story broke?
With a lot of other non-military funds, so it wasn't the only thing. It's not as clean as
uh-huh,
it would appear.
Uh-huh.
But think about this. The Barack Obama was elected on an anti-war platform.
Right.
And now you have the Democrats going along with military spending of epic proportion to fight the war in Afghanistan.
Right.
How do they do it? In my estimation, they hide this redistribution into military bills to get Republicans to sign on.
Right. All the anti-war leftists like Boxer got pork on the side along with spending for the war, which nobody knows why we are there. We're speaking with Andrew Breitbart again. If you have a quick comment, keep it to yourself. If you have a quick question, call 1-800-449-8255. It's the Savage Nation. Back in a minute.
Savage.
So the far left wing of the National Socialist Party has taken over the United States of America. It's called the Democrats under Pelosi and Reid, Boxer, Feinstein, Franken. And their playbook includes dirty tricks, dismissing any criticism, no matter how legitimate, as illegitimate, categorizing anyone who opposes their policies as racist. We've seen it all. It started in the 1960s at the universities, which have become nothing but institutions of lower living. And now we're seeing the White House, which is actually an extension of the universities rather than anything else. It's as though we're all living in one big university where the lie, the big lie, is spread every day by the White House and the government media complex. And standing against this big lie has been talk radio, the internet, and of course, Andrew Breitbart is in the eye of the hurricane. He's joining us now again on the Savage Nation. Andrew, welcome back to the program. I understand you're going to be speaking very shortly with the National Association of Black Journalists. Tell us about that.
I'm going to San Diego because I'm not hiding from my critics. If I have nothing to hide here, I can prove to people that the reason why this is happening is because I dared to stand up to the fake allegation that the N-word was said. I initially was hurled at multiple black congressmen the day before the health care bill was passed. And so at first...
Wait, hold it. I want to make it clear. You said, of course, there was no N-word. It's all invention. I want to make that clear.
Well, the way these guys were hogging the cameras and the mainstream media was playing up the false allegation, and the Tea Party had to go on the defensive again. When did you stop beating your...
But, Andrew, back in the 1960s, when the military was recruiting on campuses, the left were using a tactics well known to the communists called agent provocateurs. I'm sure you're familiar with that, where the opposition takes a position opposite to what they actually believe in order to embarrass their political enemies. So if there was an N-word thrown around here and there, or there is a poster or something derogatory towards Obama that may be a marginally racist, you can bet your boots it's the Democrats themselves who are doing it, Andrew.
Well, I can prove that. John Podesta, who is my mortal enemy, are you hearing me, John? This guy runs Think Progress, and he took videos of a plant of a person who infiltrated a Tea Party trying to, you know, claim that he was a Nazi and a racist, and he was escorted out by Tea Party people who saw that this was an obvious plant. They escorted him out. Think Progress, which is John Podesta's operation, edited out the part where he was taken out as a means to cleverly and mischievously and evilly show that the Tea Party is racist. So when these people are telling me that editing stuff online, I didn't edit it, is the worst thing that you can do, these people were able to create the false impression that that Tea Party person was a racist when it was a left-wing...
But Andrew, John Podesta set up a group that attacked Michael Savage by sending edited tapes of mine to England and getting me banned in a Western nation. I have been the first victim of these vermin, Andrew, and I'm not going to be the last. They proudly said they were going to go after talk radio, and they came after me, but I don't want to make this about me. I know who John Podesta is. He's a very good friend of Hillary Clinton. They're very good friends of Media Matters. They're all supported by George Soros. You know all of this, Andrew.
John Podesta, all you have to know is he's the architect. George Soros throws the money, and it's John Podesta who organizes it all and figures out where he can propagandize and misdirect and try and marginalize those people that would disagree with their radical plans.
Right. It's a standard tactic of the illegitimate left. I understand it. Andrew, when do you speak to the National Association of Black Journalists, and how do you think you're going to be received by them?
I'm going to come in there with a warm feeling that I am telling the truth and that I have nothing to hide. And I have asked that all they do is offer me a three-minute video where I can show them beyond a shadow of a doubt that I didn't just raise doubts by asking for offering a $100,000 reward for any evidence that the N-word was said once, let alone 15 times, which is what Congressman Carson said. I was able to go out there and find four separate videos from the exact moment in time, and the videos prove conclusively that the yarn that was spun by Congressman Carson is a falsehood that was meant to demean and marginalize and slander a goodly portion of
America. Andrew, I know you are right. I know there were no racists there that were part of the actual Tea Party. I know that for a fact. But, Andrew, they have made you into the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. They made her into Rosa Parks, so be careful.
Savage. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're living through very, very interesting times where a group of national socialists have taken over the country under the guise of being for the poor and the downtrodden, flying around in Air Force One, Air Force Two, Air Force Three, Gulfstream Five, Gulfstream 550, all the while ripping off the middle class, all the while robbing the Treasury, all the while raping the culture, all the while melting the borders down, all the while not defending the culture. And right now you have a very small army of intellectuals or operatives, if you want to call us that. You can call us anything you want, but get it right. We are the patriots and the enemies of our country. Now, Matt Drudge, in my opinion, is the Hearst of our time. Breitbart is the Pulitzer of our time. And Michael Savage is the Oliver Wendell Holmes of our time. And you are the Americans of our time. And I'm inviting you to call right now to speak to Andrew Breitbart, who is the center of the is at the center of the hurricane. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Let's make it real fast. This is not a hello, how are you? It's not a meet and greet. This is a quick question and off the air. Bernie in New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I'd like to ask Andrew if he agrees with my take on this, and I'll make it brief. It's beyond doubt that a lot of people, a lot of African-Americans have voted for Mr. Obama because they wanted to see a black person as president of the United States. It's understandable. Now, the Democratic Party and the White House were afraid that these...
Bernie, please don't give us your analysis. Question, please.
Okay. Do you think the White House and the Democrats are trying to inject a racial element to get this block of people to the polls for the midterm elections when they're...
All right, so in other words, they're trying to re-excite the base of African-American voters. Is that what you're asking, Bernie? Thank you for the call. Andrew, what do you think?
Of course, that's what the ploy is. That's what we're trying to point out here, and that Mary Frances Berry, the black civil rights leader who was appointed by Carter and Clinton, says it as much. He says that they don't want to have to answer to questions about the economy, so it's better to have your opponent have to answer whether or not you're a racist or not. And so Barack Obama is trying to be the post-racial president by acting like he's above it all and that he doesn't talk about race. But he has proxy groups. He's got the SEIU, he's got ACORN, he's got the NAACP, he's got the Congressional Black Caucus. These people will hurl the accusation of racism if you walk across the street the wrong way.
Well, it's the same way Michelle Obama lectured America about health foods and grew vegetables on the White House lawn, and then on the first thing they ate on vacation were big ice cream cones. I mean, where does the word hypocrisy come into all of it? Next question, comment, Sacramento, Rhonda, go, you're on the Savage Nation.
What happened with ACORN, and did they get that $40 billion before they split into the smaller groups? I've heard that's what's happened.
All right, we'll take the answer off when you hang up. Andrew, where is ACORN today?
Yeah, my analogy that I use with ACORN is after you see Terminator 1 and the bad guy is destroyed, and you know that there's going to be a Terminator 2. We're paying attention behind the scenes to what ACORN is doing. The sad thing about ACORN is that while it got nailed here in the United States, it's spreading internationally, getting a lot of words that they're up in Canada causing mischief. So they haven't gone anywhere, but a lot of their nefarious acts are being carried out by the SEIU. And another story that the mainstream media refused to cover was how the SEIU went to the actual house on the weekend of a Bank of America counsel who's actually a Hillary Clinton supporter, and they bust in 400 people to the front door and started chanting against the person on their private property while nobody was home except for their 14-year-old son of the bank executive. We reported that story and the mainstream media ignored it. The mainstream media is the problem out there, folks, and the paradigm.
Absolutely. The mainstream media, the government media complex, is who destroyed this country and is about to break it over their knee unless they're stopped. We know that. That's why they hate us. That's why you've been picked on. That's why I've been banned in Britain. Andrew Breitbart, let's take another quick couple of callers here. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Let us go to Mississippi. Mary, go ahead. Quickly, you're on the Savage Nation.
Do you think it's possible that Ms. Sherrod could have been fired disingenuously because they knew they would have to retract the firing and then they'd be able to undermine Mr. Breitbart's credibility?
Andrew, what do you think? You think it was a game?
I think it happened pretty darn quickly for them to think that way. I think that less
than the race thing scaring them. I think that the fact that the Pigford settlement is there, and they turned her in a very short period of time in the mainstream media into Saint Shirley when the video that they're claiming extricates her from her problem. I mean, she's telling that you can't get fired from a government job. She's saying that anybody that disagrees with Obamacare is a racist. They're trying to make her out to be a saint. And today, her partner in crime, her husband, who is a community organizer in Georgia with her, is caught on tape at the realworldview.com, Dan Reel's blog. There's a very telling video about Charles Sherrod, who also got money in the Pigford settlement, in which he says, we must stop the white man and his Uncle Toms from stealing our elections.
My God. When the heck did this break, Andrew? Where can we all see that? That's the saint's husband?
Yes, you can go to Big Government. We have it, biggovernment.com. We have that link there. Dan Reel, the Wonder Boy, was able to find this video. There's another quote that he says. The tears that we've shed so many times when the TV and the newspaper comes out the day of an election or the day before an election and tell white folk all over, wherever we are running somebody for an office, that blacks are going to take that office over and thousands are coming to the polls and you gotta get it. And so the mainstream media, Salon.com, wrote an article called The Civil Rights Heroism of Charles Sherrod, in which she writes, Andrew Breitbart sure picked the wrong people to symbolize black racism. No, I didn't isolate Shirley Sherrod or Charles Sherrod. They weren't on my radar screen. I was trying to point out that the NAACP was using race to divide the country. But now that you mentioned it, Joan Walsh of Salon, I would think that when a post-racial civil rights leader says we must stop the white man and his Uncle Toms from stealing our elections, that guy's got some deep-seated race issues.
All right, that's Andrew Breitbart. Now, we have a clip. Beowulf, play the part you want us to hear. Go ahead.
We must stop the white man and his Uncle Tom from stealing our elections.
All right, there's the saint's husband.
We must not be afraid to vote black.
All right.
We
must stop the white man from stealing our elections.
Turn a black
so the
out.
Whole thing is about, again, race and stirring up hatred and fear by the Obama administration in order to excite their radical left-wing base to once again steal the election in favor of Obama and his left-wing minions, in plain English. Next call, next case, New York City. Mary, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation.
Do you think that Obama is going on The View this week as a possible payback for his possibly asking The View last week to put on Ms. Sherrod?
I don't know, but I think that it's... I'm not going to say I feel bad for President Obama because I believe that he's orchestrating the campaign to destroy me and my reputation. Hello?
Andrew, you're fading, but what does it say, about a president who would go on a show with such low-caste characters as the type that you see, a woman who in my day would have been working in a pickle store on Essex Street who they put on television? How in the world could a president stoop to such low levels as to go on a pickle merchant show such as this?
I find it to be a joke. He is really getting in the muck here, and I think he's going to a group of people that he's going to try and foment.
But you have a yenta on that show, as I say, in my day and age when I was in my father's store, Andrew. I grew up in another time. Women like her ran pickle stores. They wore dirty aprons and sold pickles. And yet she's on CNN. All right, they're entitled to an audience. I understand that we live in an age of reality television, which is astonishing. But for the president to go on, in essence, a reality show and claim that that's journalism and to attack a man like you, who is the equivalent of the Pulitzer of our time with all of your breaking stories, tells us more about Obama than it does about you.
Well, this, for me, is not about Barack Obama. This is about destroying the mainstream media. Use and its use of political correctness and double standards as a means to shut up dissent in this country. Shirley Sherrod wanted to shut down my website, biggovernment.com. That's the same mindset that you see on the journalist, the left-wing journalist who worked with academics such as a UCLA law professor talking about how they could shut down Fox News. I mean, these people have such totalitarian instincts. I don't care if it's Venezuela or Cuba or the mainstream media in the United States, people want to shut up dissent.
Andrew, last week you on Big Piece published several articles in my defense, and I have to bring this up. I'm sorry, because you're now touching some of the buttons that excite me. Do you actually believe I was picked on first because of what reason? Why did they choose me? Why did the man you mentioned earlier, Tom Podesta and his group, because he once boasted that he worked with them, he was going to go after talk radio, blah, blah, blah. Why did they choose Michael Savage instead of Rush Limbaugh to ban in England? Why?
Well, I think that a tactic of the left is not just political correctness, which you're certainly a victim of. Also, the author, Mark Steyn, has also been singularly set aside as a villain, when in fact...
Oh, wait a minute, but Mark Steyn was never banned in Britain. Let's be clear about that. I mean, Andrew, let's be clear. He is free to travel to England. I am not.
I agree. I'm not comparing your plights. I'm just telling you political correctness is a component in the problem. But in the issue here, we're talking about moral relativism. And what they're able to do is equate the untold evils of radical Islam and the plots around the world and the people who are plotting to destroy Western civilization with a person who's exhibiting, who's using the free airwaves and the First Amendment in the United States to say politically incorrect things. For them to equate your free speech and your calls to the world to pay attention to a scourge that is expanding in the world, radical Islam, they are the ones history is going to look upon terribly for what they've done to you. And Americans who may dislike you for whatever reason don't understand there's a huge principle here that they ignore, because the mainstream media and John Podesta have had a campaign to marginalize you. It's because you're an effective storyteller, and you tell that the American civilization could be lost in a nanosecond, just like Europe lost its will years ago.
Well, Andrew Breitbart, as I said before, you've got a big job ahead of you, and I've said things also that I'd rather not repeat on this show. We read now that Obama won't release a letter revealing the administration backed the freeing of the Lockerbie bomber, Andrew Breitbart. So they've had more to do with that than meets the eye. So they, like the British, are in bed with Libya now? Andrew, does it get any worse than this? Are we going to see more about the Lockerbie bomber and Obama, or are they buttoning this one up?
Look, Michael, I can't impress upon your audience more. This is not President Obama's problem. President Obama could not be a more transparent Marxist and all the things that we're pointing out, redistributionist, all those quotes were out there. All the Reverend Wright stuff was out there, and
yes.
The mainstream media is what suppressed this information.
Yes.
This is a burden of the American people to recognize that the mainstream media did not vet this president on purpose, and they
yes.
colluded to make
yes.
sure that he got in.
Yes. Yes. As I said many, many times during the election, the man was signaling who he was. I believe, and this is my own suspicion, I've said it, people don't believe me, McCain lost the election on purpose because the Republicans wanted Obama to win as well, to foster the Marxist light agenda, because Bush already took us on this road, Andrew. Let's not forget that Bush took us halfway down this road, and Obama would like to take us all the way down the road. Look, I think we've said enough for the moment. If there's any last words you'd like to leave the Savage Nation, it's your floor. Go ahead, Andrew Breitbart.
Well, I'm just telling you that there's more to this story. All I was trying to do is show that the White House's only strategy to win in 2010 is to use the race card. They do not have any solutions for the economy, so they want to change the issue to race in a summer of discontent. That, to me, is a pretty nefarious strategy. Keep your eye on the ball. The mainstream media is going to marginalize and demonize people, and you need to go out there and support the Michael Savages of the world and the Andrew Breitbarts and the big governments of the world and anyone that is out there that is saying the unpopular things and that is getting pilloried for it. I've stood up to these people. I have not apologized for showing you what was on those tapes, and the NAACP even rebuked its own audience for its response. That was my point. The point was made, and they can't change it.
Well, good luck at the Black Journalists Association. I suggest that you go there with your eyes open and don't expect them to love you, Andrew. This is the Savage Nation thanking Andrew Breitbart for all he does for America. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, as the Greeks wrote thousands of years ago. It is good to live in interesting times. And either you're engaged in the interesting times or you may as well not be alive. I quoted Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. earlier, one sentence, listen to it, worth hearing. As life is action and passion, it is required of a man that he should share the passion and action of his time at the peril of being not to have lived, close quote. I then added to that in my book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, in 2005, taking that a step further, if we fail to act and to pursue a new American nationalism, we will fail to exist as a nation. I then went on and I wrote, the emergence of an international social liberalism, which is at its core soft communism, is a very real threat to the sovereignty of our nation. Forces from within and without our country continue to try to tell us that we are out of step with the rest of the world. The sophisticated Europeans laugh at us for our naivete and our clinging to religion and family values. These Euro-socialists and their American counterparts see a terrible beauty struggling to be born, a beauty that would like to sweep away our dying civilization and bring us into an unbrave new world. I wrote that in 2005 in the preface to Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, which was dedicated, by the way, to the American soldier, copyrighted 2005. And much of what I wrote in that prophetic book is heard from stooges like Glenn Beck and other imposters in the media. That's fine, because as Lao Tzu wrote, it does not matter really who gets credit for your ideas so long as your ideas are heard. And so it doesn't bother me to any extent whatsoever. But we're fighting for the survival of America is the point. Many of you who listen to talk radio and have listened to me for 16 years understand the battle we are in. How much further do we have to go than this? Arizona, a state being overrun by drug gangs, a state being overrun by illegal aliens like locusts who stole their health care, decimated their schools, clogged their courts and their prisons. The federal government enabled the illegal aliens. So the people themselves get a wonderful governor named Jan Brewer. She gets up there and she passes a law which mirrors federal immigration law. Doesn't change a word of it. Says we're actually going to enforce federal immigration law. And what does this government do under Holder and Obama? They actually take the side of the third world nation called Mexico. They join four third world nations in South America, and they say they're going to sue the state of Arizona for trying to protect its citizenry. So I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, was I wrong when I wrote what I wrote back in 2005? Let's go back a little further. In 2003, I published a book called The Savage Nation. And in it, I made one quote. I said, only a more savage nation can survive. Was I wrong or was I right? The answer is, I was right, but unfortunately, the savage nation has not yet emerged. We've become even more pacifist. Those of us who know what is at stake recognize that we've become even more pacifist. We've been overrun by the illegitimate, and they're grinding us down. Illegitimae non coberundum was a phrase heard in ancient Rome as the barbarians broke through the gates and were decimating Rome and breaking the empire in two. And so I repeat what the ancient Romans said, illegitimae non coberundum, which translates very simply into don't let the bastards grind you down. This is the Savage Nation. The Savage website will have the interview shortly.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thank you.
He'll come to the... He's dismissed as a dictator. How do you see him?
Oh, I don't see him as a dictator. He's been elected three times as president. He's having another election coming up in September. It's going to be monitored again by international groups. 15 times he's been elected. Mexico didn't allow these people to monitor their elections in their last elections. So it's crazy.
Some notes for the Savage Nation. Oliver Stone has said that the Jewish-dominated media, and I'm quoting him now, won't let Hitler's story be told in context. This proves exactly what I've been telling you for years. The left wing are the real fascists in this country. They meet with dictators like Castro, Chavez. They make fawning documentaries about them. They propose that Ahmadinejad is misunderstood. They blame the Jews for not depicting Hitler fairly. And the left-wing media goose steps right along with them. I'm the one banned in Britain, not Oliver Stone. Are you shocked that the left has expressed sympathy for the Nazis? Oliver Stone is even sporting a Hitler-like mustache these days, and now brags about killing a Vietnamese when he was a soldier in Vietnam. There was a famous filmmaker named Leni Riefenstahl, a woman who made documentaries about Adolf Hitler and for Adolf Hitler, and she showed him in the best possible light. She directed the film The Triumph of the Will, which depicted Hitler at the Nuremberg rallies in heroic terms, yet she was still praised by leftists for decades after World War II for her skill as a filmmaker. Has Oliver Stone become the Leni Riefenstahl of our day? Former Minnesota goofball governor Jesse Ventura, wrestler moron, has said that Oliver Stone's documentaries about dictators such as Chavez should be mandatory viewing in high school. Now I ask you, what other politicians do you suspect of having sympathy for dictators or fascists? And finally, today, does America face a greater threat from fascism on the right or on the left? There's a new book out from a fabulous author called Judith Reisman, and her book is called Sexual Sabotage, How One Mad Scientist Unleashed a Plague of Corruption and Contagion on America. And it examines an unexplored aspect of Kinsey's methodology and how deeply his influence is ingrained in American culture, even though the whole structure upon which the sexual revolution was based is based upon fraudulent science. No science. Her new book, Sexual Sabotage. And the article says, Savage cited Reisman's research in his 2005 best-selling book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. Savage said Kinsey was a degenerate, period. He disguised his voyeurism as fact and called it science. The reason the Hollywood Caesars sought to honor this disturbed creature rather than expose him is because the foundation of their sexual license is built on his teachings. He's their sexual guru. If he was exposed as the fraudulent Freud, what would that say about their endless sex capades? And as adherents to a Kinsey view of sex, the Caesars of Hollywood feel free to justify all manners of perversions, close quote. They quote me. And they go on and say, Savage, who's condemned Penthouse publisher Larry Flint as, quote, the man who brought pornography to every corner, the man who destroyed the family, has railed against the pervasiveness of pornography, which he cites as a key tool in breaking down societal boundaries and progressing a cultural and ultimately political revolution. Cultural revolution demolishes the society from within. Does that sound like something you understand, Savage said? Little doubt, Dr. Reisman will. In her book, she recently named names in indicting the global pedophile movement for ensuring that Roman Polanski escaped prosecution for drugging, raping, and sodomizing a 13-year-old girl. This is a complicit conspiracy. In fact, you know, it's amazing. In a story on U.S. reaction to Polanski's failed extradition, the Washington Times interviewed Reisman, and here's what we learned. People in power commonly surround themselves with those who share their ideals and protect their own secrets, Reisman said, noting that his 1970s Hollywood friends threw Polanski a party and opened up a 13-year-old bottle of champagne right after he was accused of raping a 13-year-old girl by making her drunk. She said, making him a heroic figure is a peon to pedophilia, she said. Look, it's pretty bad. Judith Reisman is one of the leading opponents of pornography, who argues that porno exposure releases erototoxins into the body, chemicals which alter and damage the mind and the sexuality of a pornography viewer. That's amazing stuff. So here we are. I'm glad that I have a forum and I have a microphone, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Fact is, it's a talk show. I've been around for 16 years, and with God's willing, I'll be around a little longer, whatever. And this weekly report on the shenanigans of the left coast, here is James Hurst.
You know, I recently said and wrote that Mel Gibson, who's a friend and business associate of mine, would still have a career in the movie business when this latest controversy concludes. Now, out of the blue, a big-name Hollywood filmmaker agrees with me. And I'm shocked at who it is. It's that left-wing lover of dictators, Oliver Stone.
You can't be serious.
While most of the media experts and Hollywood power players are declaring Gibson's career over, Stone disagrees, and he agrees with me that in the long run, Gibson will be able to work in Hollywood again. Everyone is supposed to have an opinion, Stone said, but most directors don't work that way. Stone pointed out that in Hollywood, quote, projects are developed slowly, and over the course of weeks, months, there will be projects, and I'm sure many of them will want to have Mel Gibson in them. Stone had gone to Britain and said this to the British press, and he was there to promote his documentary titled South of the Border. This is the movie that whitewashes the regime of Venezuelan dictator Hugo Chavez and Chavez's left-wing Latin American buddies.
Right.
Oliver Stone also took the opportunity to state his recommendation for the energy policy of the United States of America. So he's overseas, and he decides to come up with some ideas for how we should handle our energy policy. So what does Stone say we should do with our energy policy? He said, get this, that we should nationalize our energy companies.
What?
In other words, have the government take over oil, gas, and coal companies. I mean, Oliver Stone's twisted thought process is that America's natural resources are too important to be left in the private sector. So oil, natural gas, and other resources, because they belong to the people, should be taken over by government. He said that the BP oil spill, the Gulf oil spill, is typical of what happens when you allow private industry to make money on things that should be a public amenity. Here's his quote. We shouldn't make this kind of profit on oil or on health or on war or on prisons. All these industries should be public industries. This is what the director said and lectured to the assembled press. And this, of course, is unabashed Marxism, pure and simple.
Exactly.
Add to that, Oliver Stone called President Obama, the man who would be in charge of the oil, gas, and coal companies, called him this expletive, quote, Bush Nutsolite. He's expressing disdain for the current occupant of the White House, but the same guy who would take over all these companies. So how did this director develop such weird ideas? You know, Stone was born in New York City, and his father was Jewish and his mother Roman Catholic, and as a compromise, they raised their son, Ollie Stone, as an Episcopalian. He's since converted to Buddhism, and I believe now he's probably an atheist. Now, his Jewish dad was a stockbroker, which gave him the background for these Wall Street movies he makes that bash our free enterprise system that also made him rich. But he was rich. He grew up in affluent areas in Manhattan and Stamford, Connecticut. And he became obsessed with conspiracy theories and was even able to get one of them up on the big screen in the flick JFK, where he told audiences that many high-level government officials were involved in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Of course, whether you believe it or not, there's a lot of different theories, but so many people believe that what was in the movie is fact. Unfortunately, they also believe that what was in another movie he made, Natural Born Killers, was somehow important and factual and should be acted upon because this was a story supplied by Quentin Tarantino, and it was a piece of psychedelic cinematic trash that glorified violence.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2003, Oliver Stone went to Cuba. He went there to interview his hero, Fidel Castro, for 3 days, and he filmed the conversations with the Cuban dictator, and he put them in a movie, a documentary that was titled Comandante. The film was scheduled to be aired, but HBO shelved it. And the word was that they shelved it because it was way too soft, even for HBO, on Castro. But also there was an incident at the time where hijackers threatened to kill passengers on a Cuban ferry boat if they were not taken to the U.S. So Oliver Stone went back to Cuba, filmed another movie elevating the communist thug dictator. It was titled Looking for Fidel. This time, the film was shown on HBO in early 2004. So this year, Stone filmed this sycophantic Chavez movie, and he left out any interviews with Chavez's many opponents or his many victims. And he praised the despot Chavez and criticized the Obama administration for not doing enough to improve relations with Chavez and his communist Latin American allies.
Hmm.
I mean, Chavez has nationalized a huge portion of Venezuela's economy, including oil, banking, electric, and steel industries. Maybe that's where Stone got the idea to do the same in the U.S. He also interviewed a Bolivian leader, Evo Morales, and this is a guy who similarly expanded the state to take over the energy infrastructure. So these kind of gave Stone this brilliant idea for our country, brilliant, right? In the Chavez movie, Stone paints a fawning portrait of Hugo, but leaves out the snuffing out of free speech that's taking place in that country under his regime, where Hugo is shutting down media in the form of television stations, radio stations, newspapers, any media that disagrees with his policies. What is going on in Stone's head? Well, maybe it's similar to what is going on in most lefties' heads, but maybe it's the drugs. Stone reportedly somewhat based his movie Scarface on his own addiction to cocaine, which he allegedly had to kick while he was writing and developing the script. He recently said he wants to remake Scarface. On the DVD of Natural Born Killers, the director's cut, one of the producers, Jane Hampshire, tells the viewers how she took psilocybin mushrooms, that's a psychedelic drug, together with Stone and some of the cast and crew, and almost got pulled over by a police officer. And lo and behold, a scene Stone later wrote into the film looks just like that.
Really?
In 1999, Stone was arrested. He pleaded guilty to alcohol and drug charges. He was ordered into a rehab program. He was arrested again in May of 2005 in Los Angeles for possession of some kind of illegal drug. So what is Stone up to now? What kind of movie is he up to for the future? You know what? He's musing about the possibility, I kid you not, of making a film about Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Yeah. Oh, and of course, you know, Stone would find the softer side of the Iranian lunatic. When asked about an Ahmadinejad movie, he described the project as a, quote, hot potato, close quote. And then Stone said this, obviously, he's got bad press in the West. Only a left-wing Hollywood dictator lover would describe the dire situation in Iran created by this guy, Ahmadinejad, as, quote, bad press, close quote.
Exactly.
Thanks, Michael, for providing some cognitive therapy for left-wing mental disorders. Back to you, my friend.
Thanks, James. It doesn't seem that the Hollywood mentality is getting any better under Obama. Not that I expected it to.
Savage.
The left wing and the mainstream media, you know, are attacking the Tea Parties, which are really, what are Tea Parties? It's middle class people who have had enough. They're being milked to death by Obama the bum, by Obummer, okay, for his own personal credit card. I mean, do you want to lay it on the line? Vacation, 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 vacation. Then back to another vacation. They've called the Tea Party as racist, wackos, every name under the sun. But there's only one representative in Congress who actually stands up for the Tea Parties, Michelle Bachmann. She joins us now to talk about this. Congresswoman Bachmann, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael Savage, you are the greatest. Thank you so much for having me on again. Well, one thing that has really upset me is hearing the vicious sneers that the left have made against decent mainstream Americans. The movement that we have seen that has been phenomenal in this country has been people getting off of the couch saying, we don't like what we see going on in Washington, D.C. We don't like it when the federal government is spending more money that they're taking in. We don't like it because we're taxed enough already. And we certainly think that the Congress should act within their constitutional limitations. This is the big controversial people known as Tea Party people. That's it. That's pretty mainstream America. But what's happened? They have been viciously undermined, viciously attacked by the media, by people in academia, by members of Congress even. And as a result of that, I just felt that it was important to give a voice to this, what I consider credible group of people across the United States. In fact, it got so bad that one of my colleagues, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee, actually said to the NAACP that she said, we know who these people were a long time ago. They used to wear sheets over their head. Now they're walking down the aisle and they've taken their sheets off and they call themselves Tea Party patriots.
What? Unbelievable.
Well, think of that. Here, Representative Sheila Jackson Lee just called millions of people across this country who disagree with Obama policies, essentially viciously equating them with the KKK. That's a pretty blatant statement to make, and the media essentially ignored what she had to say. I think that's wrong. I think it's wrong, that resolution that came out of the NAACP, which, by the way, nobody's been able to read. They say they aren't even going to release this written statement of what they passed at the NAACP. That sounds like something Speaker Pelosi would do, make us pass a bill without even being able to read it. So what I did is filed paperwork last Friday to start a Tea Party caucus here in D.C., and it was actually approved on Monday. We were very grateful for that. And then I started inviting other members to join. And very quickly, we had about a dozen people sign up. Now we have 38 people that have signed up to be a part of this caucus, which is very successful. And we had our very first meeting. It was a wonderful meeting. And here's who we are. We're not the mouthpiece for the Tea Party. We're the earpiece for the Tea Party. We want to listen, because if there's anything that we've heard in the last 18 months from people, it's that Congress is not listening to the mainstream views of people across this country. So we're doing something really phenomenal. We as members of Congress are willing to listen to real people. So we had our first meeting for the Tea Party Caucus, and we had 24 members come. 12 real people came, and it was one of the most exciting times I think we've ever had in Congress. We sat in regular chairs, and we put the real people in the chairs that the Congress usually sits in.
Really?
We had just a phenomenal group of people. We had an African-American woman who served our country in the military who came to us with her little baby and said, I want you to see my African-American face, and I am telling you that I'm a Tea Party person, I am not a racist, and I'm tired of being told that I'm a racist. Absolutely beautiful woman from Dallas, Texas, another African-American woman, came in to tell us that she's a businesswoman and she doesn't like what the Obama administration has been doing, and she's African-American, and she wanted us to know she is not a racist, and she's offended that the Tea Party is being called racist. We had a fellow from the country of Colombia who came here legally to the United States, started a construction company with 10 employees. He's now down to 6 because of the bad economy. But he went to his job site yesterday morning at 5 in the morning, prepared his construction site, and then left with his wife in a pickup truck to come up here and talk to us members of Congress to tell us what's happening here in Washington, D.C. is very similar to what he saw happen in Colombia. He said that the government made loans to private businesses, and then they put heavy, unworkable regulations on private business so that they couldn't make a profit. Then the government offered to bail these businesses out. Well, what happened is they ended up taking over the businesses. And this fellow told us, members of Congress, I saw this happen in my country of Colombia. That's why I came here, for liberty. And now I see it all over again. Wake up. Don't let this happen to us.
Exactly.
I mean, we had person after person tell their stories. The members loved hearing from these people. Now, the very first person that I invited to be in the caucus was Speaker Pelosi. I'm still checking my mailbox. I haven't heard from her. I don't have any Democrats that have joined, but I just came off the floor. I had invited two more Democrats to please come and join the caucus because, again, we're not the mouthpiece of the Tea Party. We're not trying to co-opt it. We're not trying to direct it from Washington, D.C. or change the agenda or turn them into a political party. We don't want to do anything like that. I don't want to vouch for the Tea Party or any organization or person in the Tea Party. All we want to do is listen. We aren't even saying we're going to agree with every idea. We're just saying we want to listen to what people in the Tea Party have to say, because we think they're credible. We think they have something to say that's worthwhile, because after all, they believe what we believe. And that's that we're taxed enough already, that government needs to not spend more than what it takes in, and that we need to act within the limitations of the Constitution. So I am really excited. I am not the spokesperson for the Tea Party, nor do I want to be, because the Tea Party needs to stay what it is, a grassroots movement, a set of ideas. It's not a political party like Republicans and Democrats. It's a set of ideas that all of us can get behind. And we have got to take this country back for constitutional conservatives. We have to. Our window of opportunity is this November, and we have everything riding on it right now. The other thing is we also saw President Obama sign the financial reform bill. Well, that sounds good. I mean, the bad guys that got us into this mess, they should pay, and nobody disagrees with that. The only problem is, the bad guys aren't even in this bill. They're nowhere near this bill.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because the bad guys were Fannie and Freddie and the Community Reinvestment Act. And guess whose fingers are all over those bills? You guessed it. Nancy Pelosi, Barney Frank, Chris Dodd, Barack Obama. Well, isn't that interesting? Now, they control every lever of power in Washington, D.C., and that's why we aren't getting any justice when it comes to this financial meltdown, because they're protecting their own, and they're protecting their own past negative decisions that they made that got us into this mess. And so instead, this is what's going to happen. We're all supposed to be cheering and patting on the back President Obama for signing this bill. Didn't he do a great thing? But here's exactly what's going to happen. Now the president will have permanent bailout authority going forward. He won't have to ask the Congress for a vote in order to bail out private businesses. The first thing that people are going to see is the end of free checking. So just think, isn't this great? Free checking is going to go away. Then we're going to see an increase on ATM fees when people go to withdraw money. The third thing that is going to happen will be the credit will become much more difficult for individuals and for businesses to get. So instead of putting handcuffs on Wall Street, they're putting handcuffs on Main Street, people living on Main Street. So this is a very bad bill. And so if the gavel leaves Speaker Pelosi's hands in November, and I hope it does, and goes into the hands of some constitutional conservatives, what we have to do is, first of all, repeal Obamacare immediately, lock, stock, and barrel, every bit of it. Then we need to repeal this financial reform bill. We need to reform all of this culture of dependency that the president has been creating. And then we need to dramatically dial back the spending, which we can do. There's so much waste here, you wouldn't believe it. It'd make you sick.
True.
And then what we have to do is cut taxes. And it's very possible. We're about the highest corporate tax rate in the world at 34%. We need to cut that back down to 9%. Zero out capital gains, zero out the death tax, zero out alternative minimum tax. I mean, this is how bad it is. All of these bailouts from President Obama, if you would add all of these bailouts together, including his stimulus and all the rest, it adds up to $3.7 trillion.
Oh, my God.
Do you know that we could have, that instead of spending that $3.7 trillion and getting an economy in decline, if we would have just said no one pays any taxes at all, no business, no individual, no Medicare, no Social Security taxes, nothing. Nobody pays any taxes for a year and a half. Can you imagine the choice between creating a socialist welfare state on one hand that has our economy in a tailspin, or having people pay no taxes at all for a year and a half? I'm telling you, we would have been the go-go economy in the world. This is where every investor in the world would have come. We wouldn't even be able to find enough employees to fill all the jobs in America if we would have gone down that route. And I think once the American people realize what Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid have done to us, they've essentially put the next generation into an economic form of a debtor's prison. Now, I know the left is going to jump all over that statement, but it isn't too far from the truth, because the next generation is looking at the heaviest tax burden of probably any generation in American history, and it'll mean a reduced standard of living. So, I mean, really, this is the choice that's before us right now. And so I'm just hoping that people recognize that these Tea Party patriots, and that's what I call them, patriots across the country, these are the people that we should thank, because instead of vilifying them and instead of calling them racist, we need to thank them, because they think enough of this country. They think enough of this Constitution, and they think enough of the next generation of young people coming up and new immigrants legally coming into this country, that they want to make sure that the next group of Americans enjoys this great country and has the opportunities and freedoms that we've all enjoyed. So I thank people across the country who joined the Tea Party. I thank them for going out and going to rallies and town hall meetings. They are the patriots. They deserve our thanks, not to be vilified. That's why we started this Tea Party caucus, because they deserve to be listened to. And I've asked Speaker Pelosi if she would allow us to have Skype, that's a free internet service, so that we don't force people to have to come all the way to D.C. to talk to members of Congress. We would like to be able to have people talk to us through the Internet. It's a free service on Skype, but Speaker Pelosi has said no. She said no to us. So we're trying to get Skype so that we can have on a regular basis a dialogue with anybody anywhere across the country to speak to us members of Congress who are saying, we want to listen to you. To give you that forum. So we're hoping Speaker Pelosi will give us that opportunity.
Where can we read more?
For more information on the Tea Party Caucus or any of this, people can go to michellebachmann.com and we'd be happy to talk with you and dialogue. So thanks again.
Michelle Bachman, thanks for the update and for being with us again on the Savage Nation.
As always, you are the best. Thank you.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
I found my thrill.
It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
On Blueberry Hill.
The Shirley Sherrod controversy is not over. She's the lady who was fired by the Agriculture Department last week. I told you it was going to get bigger because the left-wing media wouldn't let it go. I told you they're going to make Shirley Sherrod into a Rosa Parks. And sure enough, over the weekend, a Princeton professor who got there strictly through affirmative action, a real race baiter and a race hater, Cornel West, compared this woman, this unknown bureaucrat, to a Martin Luther King.
The example of Shirley Sherrod is, just like Martin King, when you put the focus on the suffering and allow blacks and whites and reds and browns to come together to focus on the suffering, that's how the temperature goes down. It doesn't go down by avoiding. It doesn't go down by deodorizing the dialogue.
I think he should deodorize his own dialogue. And, of course, Obama, who was responsible for Sherrod's firing, is now milking the situation for all it's worth.
With respect to race, the stories that she was telling about her own biases and overcoming them, those are actually good lessons for all of us to learn because we all have bias. I've talked about the fact that as I was growing up, there were times where I had stereotypes, both about blacks and whites, that you had to work through and admit to yourself. And the more you were willing to bring those things up to the surface, the more you could identify them as being wrong and move beyond them. If there's a lesson to be drawn from this episode, it's that rather than us jump into conclusions and pointing fingers at each other, we should all look inward and try to examine what's in our own hearts. And as a consequence, I think we will continue to make progress.
But you see, Obama has divided the country more than any previous president. And
Now, the Savage Nation Hollywood Idiot of the Day.
Over the weekend, Oliver Stone, hero of the radical drug-induced left, said that the Jewish-dominated media won't allow Hitler to be depicted in the proper context. I hope all the liberal Jews out there will finally understand they've been digging their own graves with their liberalism. Here is the vile anti-Semite Oliver Stone praising another dictator, Hugo Chavez.
It's not that much we want to get rid of Venezuela. We want to control the region. You know, we can always buy our oil on any market in the world. You know, and Iran is the same issue. We always have problems with regional powers, whether it's Iran or Iraq or Venezuela.
This is a documentary that's pro-Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in it that is critical of him?
Yes, quite a bit, actually. There's 20% of it is filled with anger at him. We show some of the Venezuelans. We show certainly the American media goes crazy about him, and that's they've distorted the truth.
Unbelievable to me.
Do you like him?
Personally, very much like you do, I think. You saw him.
You got it. He's hard not to like as a person.
He's genuine.
Now, I've told you that if both parties agree on something, the people are getting screwed. Well, here's Howard Dean praising Newt Gingrich and saying Gingrich should run for president. Why do you suppose he wants Gingrich to run? Because he knows Gingrich will lose. Schmendrick.
Let me put in a good word for Newt Gingrich here.
That's a kiss of death.
No, I'm serious. The biggest difference between this Republican Congress, and I don't agree with very much that Newt Gingrich wants to do, but the biggest difference is Newt has a ton of ideas to move the country forward. He did when he was Speaker. There are no ideas in the Republican Party right now in the Congress. They're the party of no. They desperately need some intellectual leadership. And whatever you think of Newt Gingrich, he can supply intellectual leadership. So I hope he does run.
I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. All right, play Blue Monday.
Blue Monday.
I was in a sporting goods store the other day, and it said, where will you find summer? I said, you know, it's true. Where am I going to find summer? A lot of people find it with high mountain hiking, this, that. I don't blame them. I don't know. I don't know where to find summer. To me, it's a transient thing. You know, I've always, even when I was 17, 18, I wrote the same thing. There is no such thing as happiness. There's moments of relative a lack of pain. That's happiness. A relative lack of anxiety is happiness for some for some people. I don't know if that's the human condition or some people are that way. They're tense all the time and then they drop dead. There's no fixing it. What are you going to do, go to a therapist? Most of them are crazier than you are. What are you going to them for? They're lunatics. They're on medication themselves. They're going to help you. It's like the blind leading the blind, as they said. All right.
Savage.